Now, I have something. You're just going to have to listen to this, I'll tell you. Once in the great wild, you get something in the mail that really throws you, you know? And it doesn't happen very often. I mean, many letters are funny, or many things that are said in letters are funny and so on, but once in a while, something comes that really surprises you, and I think you're going to be surprised. At least I was. You ready for it? Give me a little mood music for this, would you please? Thank you very much. Like mine. You're learning to play well. I'm surprised at the vast improvement in such a short time. But of course, this is always something I've said to you many times over. If you put your mind to it, you can do damn near anything. It's a little showy, but you'll outgrow that. While you're about it, why not bring home some maple nut ice cream? Oh, yeah, a quart's enough. I'm not going to mess with it myself, but it has its uses. So tonight we salute Julia Child. Who's she? I don't know. Just like the way the name rolls off the tip of the tongue. I'm sorry. I forgot. I was about to tell you about this letter. You will reset that, Arthur, if you will. In fact, any one of those cuts would do all right with it. So, dear Mr. Shepherd, my colleagues and I enjoy listening to your program. Now, so far, that's conventional, right? Since your signal is very weak here in Milano, we are not able to recover the musical portions of your broadcast. I just received this letter in the mail this afternoon. It is mailed and was mailed in Milan, Italy. And here is a guy with his friends who listen to this show from this station every day and every night. He's listening right now, this minute, in Milan, Italy. It says, my colleagues and I enjoy listening to your show. Now, I must point out, this is not being broadcast on shortwave. It is, they're hearing this direct. And are you curious how they're doing it, Art, being an engineer? Listen to this one. Since your signal is very weak here in Milan, we are not able to recover the musical portions of your broadcast. I would like to know if any recordings of your Jew's harp head thumping performances are available. And then he includes the address. He happens to be a doctor and a professor of public health at the University of Milan. You ready for that, friend? So this is not a cockamamie letter. He says, P.S., in case you personally read this note you may be interested in our receiving rig. We have dual antennas and recorders, one on the top of the Hotel Palace, the other atop the Hotel Savoy, which is one half wavelength away, roughly. We record your signals through a 3KC spectral window and, quote, noise through two adjacent 1.5KC windows. For recovery, the, quote, noise is subtracted, a la Fourier analysis, leaving your signal clear except for a strong local signal, which is also recorded at high gain and later removed. The voice quality is poor, but is totally intelligible on a daily basis. The music is not readable at all. Now, that's what he's talking about, is a highly technical form of receiving extremely faint signals. And the minute I got this letter, now for those of you who you know may be skeptical about this, I might point out the minute I got the letter, I went up to see Giff, who is one of the engineering executives here and a good technical man, Giff Campbell. And I showed him this letter, and he says he knows what he's talking about. He says that is technically possible, and it is. That this is part of a growing new hobby. And he goes on with a lot more technical details, which I don't want to burden you with, about how they sit in this hotel in Milan. He's apparently living in this hotel, and several of his colleagues are there, and they've set up this highly complex receiving equipment where they can listen to the show every day they want. And they do it with all kinds of filters and so on. Now, I think that one of the fastest growing underground hobbies today, and it's a curious thing because it's a hobby that is really having a resurgence from the days when I remember my old man, for example. One of the first memories I have of my father, and you probably have your own memories of your own father, one of the very first memories you have of your father, what was he doing? I mean, actually doing. One of the first memories I have of my old man is him sitting in the living room. We had this, living room, real living room type place with the overstuffed furniture and all that stuff. And he would be in the living room, and he was sitting in front of this radio. He had a radio which was like the center of his universe. He loved his radio. Now, that didn't mean he loved listening to the radio. That's two different things. Now, a lot of people love their television set because they love the stuff that they see on it. But that's not the same as a guy who loves his television set as a piece of equipment. And he's not really concerned with what he sees on it. And, you know, there are those, too. I ran into a guy the other day who's one of the country's leading DX listeners or viewers on TV. He has a highly complex rotary antenna, which he uses. And he lives out on Long Island, and he has this tower up about 75 feet, maybe 100 feet in the air. And on the top of it, he's got this tremendous directional TV antenna, receiving antenna. It's not a rabbit ears or anything like that. It's a highly complex Yagi antenna. It's a professional type with the rotary drive and everything else. And at night, he tunes into channels like 3 and 6 and channels which you don't see anything here locally unless you have a really special type of antenna system. And, of course, on channel, say, for example, channel 4, when they go off the air. And he rotates his antenna like a great seeing eye. And every night he picks up St. Louis. he picks up stuff like strange things like Alamogordo, New Mexico. And he logs these things. He keeps a very intricate, involved log as to whether or not the picture is really legible, whether he can really see it. And sometimes, of course, being that they're broadcast on two different channels, sometimes he can only see the picture, and he can't get the sound. Other times, the sound comes through beautiful. He's getting a tremendous sound from some station in Georgia or someplace like that, but he can't see the picture. Now, his greatest coup was one night, sitting and he, what, the way he does it, to prove to people that he actually does it, he's got a Polaroid camera set up. Now, he writes to the television stations involved, you know, to get a confirmation card and all that. They get a letter back from the manager of the station that they actually were broadcasting. And the way he proves it is interesting. He's got a Polaroid camera. And he sets this Polaroid camera up at night. He gets it all set up, see, so that when when he picks up a really rare signal, let's say he picks up, Boulder, Colorado, will suddenly come in for a few brief seconds, you see, because this stuff is very shifty. There's all kinds of Canelli heaviside layer involved, all kinds of strange sunspots and so on, and all of a sudden the signal may come zap, come in. And by the way, he follows all the ultra-high frequency scatter charts and so on that are available to anybody who's involved in VHF and UHF work, where they can predict various types of reflective signals well in advance. You know, that you can buy a chart which will predict what the E layer or the Canelli heaviside layer will do for weeks in advance. This is for professional people. They can really tell what they're going to see. So he'll pick up a signal, and instantly he begins to photograph it with his Polaroid camera. Now, sometimes he gets a fairly decent picture, other times he doesn't. But when he gets a good picture, and he waits till they make their station break. So on comes the station break. It says WKLNUCK, Pitcairn, Iowa. Look, he's taking the pictures. And then he takes the print, and he makes two of them. He has one for himself, and then the other one he sends off to the station. But he actually received the signal. He shows where he was and all that. And then he gets back a confirmation card. His greatest coup was the brief moment one night. And he said it was extremely brief. One night, he picked up a fugitive signal from Paris, France. He actually picked up a video signal, a brief but unmistakable signal from Paris. And it was direct, of course. This has nothing to do with with moon bouncer coaxial cable. It was the real thing. Well, now this is a sneaky undercurrent, underbelly hobby that's growing like mad. Have you ever heard of this hobby? You haven't, really? This is WOR, New York. And right now, at this minute, I would like to know, this just for my own purposes, I would like to know how many guys are listening to the show tonight. DX listeners who are picking up this show, picking me up tonight, in places widely separated, and they're doing it purely because they're interested in DX listening. That's a great new hobby, especially among kids. That older people tend to look upon radio as, you know, just that thing in the corner where they get the news and once in a while they get the time on. But the kids, many kids, are buying shortwave, highly complex FM, really sensitive AM receivers, and they're using them, and shortwave too, to explore all those points on the dial that the average person never listens to. Most people look upon radio as just the thing they turn on and that's it, you know. But it's a fantastic world. If you ever get a good antenna on your radio receiver, and I'm talking about the AM band right now at this point, because the AM band covers a larger territorial area than, say, FM, which is largely line of sight. You won't hear much in the way of DX on FM. But let me tell you, you take your radio receiver and you put an antenna on it. And I think this is why a lot of people have kind of dropped out of that hobby, because most of the receivers, and certainly, in fact, almost every receiver you buy today has this little built-in ferrite antenna, which is really just a substitute for an antenna. It's no antenna at all. It makes it work well enough on local signals. But if you stick an antenna on this thing and run that antenna out the window and up maybe to the roof of your house, you would be astounded at the stuff you would hear. And it is just amazing. It's just like somebody's taken the curtain and pulled it open on the window, and you suddenly see a whole world out there. Well, I from time to time, I remember my old man, for example. I can remember him sitting in front of his radio. And he used to sit there in front of that radio every night. I mean, night after night after night. And he had this receiver that he was really proud of. It was like today if some guy were to go out and buy himself a Ferrari. And he may not, drive at 250 miles an hour or something, but just having this great piece of equipment is a great feeling to have it. Well, he used to have a great receiver. We didn't have anything else now. So, I mean, you know, we tended to live on meatloaf, but he got this receiver, which was a very expensive, highly tuned and extremely sensitive radio receiver. And we put an antenna. The old man put an antenna on the roof, see? And I remember when he and Uncle Carl, all my uncles, got together to put this antenna up. Now, this was not a... Don't assume this is a battery or anything like that. It was much after those days. So not all the old codgers writing, yes, I remember the Notre Dame circuit that I built in 1923. This is not what we're talking about. This was in the late 30s, and it was probably the peak period of good radio receivers, before they went into miniaturization and just simply local reception. And so he put up an antenna. He bought an antenna that was a tuned doublet that RCA, I think it was an RCA antenna that they used to put out for DX listening. It's a very involved antenna. Had a twisted pair lead in and had a ballon, what would be a matching transformer at the top of the thing, and it was really quite an antenna. So he ran his antenna, put up a pole on the roof of the house. And the pole was probably 25 or 30 feet high. He got a couple of big 2x2s and built it like a little tower. And, of course, our house was a two-story house, so it was pretty well up in the air. And then he ran this antenna all the way back to the garage. He put up another big pole back there with wires, the whole bit. And he ran the lead in down into the living room. He used to sit there and tune in DX stuff. He was a nut on it. And he kept very involved, meticulous logs. He had these big ledger sheets. And he used to keep logs of what time he heard the signal, what they were doing, what exact frequency it was, whether or not he got a confirmation card and all that stuff. And he kept these page after page after page. Now, he didn't only listen to, American signals. Because when he put this antenna system up, the whole idea was that he could hear foreign signals, not on shortwave, which anybody could do, but foreign signals on AM. And so he would tune in things like Lima, Peru, on broadcast. And at 2 o'clock in the morning, you'd hear a sudden yelling out in the living room. I'm asleep, seeing you all say, oh, whoa, hurry up, get everybody, get up, whoa, whoa. The old man is sitting in front of his radio sets, and he's got 9 empty bottles of beer all around him. And he says, shh, shh, listen, listen, hear that? And you hear, totally unintelligible, see? And he says, shh, listen. Mexico City. Now, shh, listen. He'd be out of his gourd. Eyeballs popping up like ping pong balls. And everybody's up. My mother is standing there looking real sleepy. And she's got these aluminum rheostats in her hand. She says, why don't you come to bed? You know, you're waking right up. Shh, listen, listen. And he's sitting there crouched over his radio, sucking away at the Pabst Blue Ribbon beer. And he has just finally, at long last, logged XEL, Mexico City. Well, this has forever infected me. I guess, you know, we're always infected by the people around us. And ever since, you know, I was a little kid, because of my old man flipping over the way his radio worked, he never worried about what he heard. I think a lot of people have confused this with me. They think that I used to sit and listen to the radio when I was a kid. I never did. Radio, as a listening thing, was never interesting to me. I never hardly ever listened to it. But I built radios. There's a fine distinction. You agree, Art? Very fine distinction. And I never built any broadcast receivers. All the stuff I built were amateur radio communications receivers and stuff. But the old man was totally devoted to listening to DX on the broadcast band. And he used to really pick it up. I mean, he'd pick up stuff like Prague. Once in a great while, he would really do something fantastic. Like he occasionally, when things were absolutely right, he would pick up, say, something like Sydney. Now, that's absolutely possible. If you don't think it is possible, let me tell you this. That a few years ago, I worked on a radio station out in the Midwest. And a lot of it, of course, depends on the frequency that you're broadcasting. And I hope this isn't boring you, you know, but it's a subject that hardly anybody ever discusses. Radio is a technique. I used to be on a radio station out in the Midwest. It was a big, 50,000-watt station, and they had a strange frequency. It was way down around 1530 down there, way down with the police calls and stuff like that. Almost shortwave, as a matter of fact. And they had this tremendous antenna system. They had something like 6 or 8 towers that were, maybe 600, 700, 800 feet tall up on a big hill out there, and they had a good ground system. Now, this is going to seem hard for you to believe. In fact, looking back on it, it even seems difficult for me to believe. But I was on late at night out there, and at the time I was going to school. So I was kind of working both ends of the scale. I was half out of my skull most of the time because I would never get a chance to sleep and all that. And I was on, 1 and 2 o'clock in the morning in this station. I used to get regular letters from a fan club. There was a fan club that developed that listened to me, and it was if you can imagine, a Gene Shepherd fan club, but there it was. And it was a fan club in Christchurch, New Zealand. How do you like them apples, friends? And of course, they were hearing me in the middle of the day there, because here I was on, say, something like 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, and this is all the way across the globe, so it's daytime over there. And these guys, and they really did. They really did hear me, because they would send regularly. I would get a note from Christchurch, New Zealand, and they would write things that I had said and talked about, because this was their way of proving to me they were really hearing me. And absolutely authentic. And I couldn't believe, these guys were on a regular basis. Now, that means that it would be like as if in the middle of the afternoon, say at 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon, if you took your radio receiver and turned it on, I'm not talking about shortwave, your regular AM receiver, and you listened to Tokyo for a while coming in. That would be pretty remarkable. And this is what they did. Well, so one night, just as out of curiosity one night, I've talked about this. This is a pretty wild thing, getting a regular letter from a group of people who listen to me regularly in New Zealand. And I said, I would just be curious to know how many people are hearing me in countries outside of America who listen regularly. I just want to know. Just write me a letter, and we'll see that you get some kind of a confirmation card or something like that. We figured out something. But I just tossed it off. Within the next 2 weeks, as a result of that one comment, I received letters from 27 different countries. I remember that figure very well because we were astounded. I mean, from places like Peru. We got letters from very unexpected places like Gibraltar. Strange places. And apparently there are DX people. This is more outside of America than it is inside America. There are people with very elaborate antenna systems who listen to stuff way far and removed from their locale. I mean, real DXers. But that 27 different countries at one fell swoop. And it went all the way from Sweden to Australia. Tremendous. And tonight, excuse me, tonight at this time, it's very hard to know. Since here it is, it's winter time, and winter time, of course, makes a big difference. Maybe I ought to even go a little further in this whole thing of radio, because I've spent a lifetime as an amateur radio operator and dealing with this kind of thing as a hobby, and of course, it's a highly technical hobby, and you have to get involved in it, or you don't do it. I guess a lot of people are not aware of the things that cause reception to be different in one area than in another. Now, wintertime is different from summertime in reception. You probably noticed that that at late at night when you're driving home in your car, you can hear signals from, you know, pretty wild places. I mean, all over the world, actually all over the United States. Well, that's much more common in the wintertime than it is in the summer, primarily because of the difference in Earth temperature, the atmospheric temperature, that the Canelli Heaviside layer, there's an ionized layer which exists around the Earth. There are different layers. There's the A layer, the B layer, C layer, and so forth, the Van Allen belt, and so on. And these layers are the layers that reflect radio signals. They reflect it just the way you'd reflect a mirror. A mirror reflects light. And so when I broadcast on this frequency, the signal will go up and hit this layer, and it will be reflected. And it may bounce for 1,000 miles. It may only bounce 50 miles as the skip. That's called skip frequency, as your skip broadcast. And as your skip changes, it'll move on further and further. And it often follows the night. So, in fact, it always follows the night. So as the sun goes down, the skip, almost the way the sun goes, the skip increases until when you hit midnight, 2, 3 o'clock in the morning, your skip is at its absolute maximum. And you will hear signals coming in from, say, San Francisco at 2 or 3 in the morning if you have an antenna on your receiver. And then as it begins to get towards morning, the skip slowly changes, and those signals slowly fade out until, as the sun comes up, they're gone completely. It's like a whole world has disappeared when the sun comes up, and now you're back home again. And this is part of it. Now, of course, all of you have heard the story of the sunspots. Well, sunspots do really affect transmission, especially on the higher frequencies. It doesn't affect it much on AM, but it'll affect television. Sometimes you'll go through a whole 2 or 3 month period when your TV set doesn't seem to be working well. And you think, you know, oh, that's a crummy set. I just had it fixed. Look at this crummy thing. Well, actually, if you talk to friends of yours, you'll find that that everybody's set is working badly due to the effect of sunspots. And you notice that flutter that comes on your TV sometimes. You'll notice it on FM. You'll get a flutter, and the picture will flop over a time or two. Notice when that happens, notice that a jet airplane has just passed overhead. There's a direct correlation that this airplane, what you're really doing then at that point, you're acting as a very crude form of radar. Not really radar. It's a very crude form of radar. And what's happened is that big metal airplane has gotten between the bouncing signal, which is coming down, and had gotten between you and the source, and it's caused all kinds of strange reflections on that airplane. And so you'll notice you'll suddenly get this flutter, and it flutters out, and the airplane is going over. You'll get this on FM quite often, and that's because again that aircraft. Now this is in essence the way radar works. That radar really is. Of course, it's a reverse process, but this is really the way radar, the basic concept of radar. Now, when I remember one time, these are the kind of things which you never can explain, really. Some things, well, I suppose if you have all the technical data, you could explain it. But one time, I came home from school. I'm about 16, something, 16, 17, and I had a very, very, very minutely powered transmitter. As a matter of fact, I was running, for you, any of you guys that are hams, you'll know what I'm talking about. I was running roughly 2.5 watts input to a pentode. In fact, it was a 6L6, a beam-powered pentode tube with very low voltage on the plate. And I was running about 2.5 watts to this thing, to a 66-foot center-tuned doublet. Now, that was primarily a 40-meter antenna, but I had doubled down with a Pi network, and I'm down on 20 meters, okay? Now, for those of you who don't understand what this means, I'm down on short wave now, and I'm running so little power that I'm having trouble even hearing myself. you know, it's like I turn my receiver and I start keying. It was cold, you see. And I was really having a bad time. I would, for weeks, I would call and I would call different guys and I'd hear signals coming in. I never, hardly ever worked anybody. Once in a while, I'd hook a guy in Cleveland, which, and he would barely hear me. So one day, I come home, I turn on my receiver, and it's the middle of summer. This is what made it so strange. It was the middle of summer, hot summer. Ooh, it was a hot, stormy day with a lot of thunder shower activity in the area, lightning and stuff, and I hear a lot of crashing in my receiver, and nothing, absolutely not a signal on the band, absolutely dead. It was like if you tuned on your radio tonight, and there was just no signals on it, just a lot of static. It was dead, except for one thing. There was a tremendously loud signal. Tremendously loud signal that seemed to cover most of the band. It was like he was halfway across the band, and it was one of the loudest CW signals I ever heard, and it was raw AC. Now, you know how most codes sound. You know, code is a high-pitched boop, boop. You know how code sounds. Bow, 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 bow. This is CW. It's a clear, clean whistle. And that's the way it's supposed to sound. Well, this guy's signal was raw AC, and it went something like this. It was a signal that was so loud that it was literally blasting my cans right off my head, my earphones. And that was very suspicious to me, because there was nothing else on the band. And he was coming in so loud that I just sat there and listened to him. I said, what the heck is this guy, you know? This is a phony signal. It was raw AC. It did not have any filtering on the final power supply, which made it even sound more suspicious. And I immediately thought, uh-oh, here's a bootlegger, some kid playing around who shouldn't be there, you know? And I listened. It's going, sending very slowly and deliberately, which made him sound even more like a bootlegger who didn't really know the code. Signals coming in on the band, and the way he was coming in, it was like, you know, gangbusters. The top of my head was flying off, and I says, uh-oh, there's some kid two blocks away who's a bootlegger who's got himself a spark coil, and he's sitting there playing around, see? So he's calling CQ. He signs. He stands by. He has called CQ. He is now standing by for an answer. So I've got my 2.5 watts all fired up. So Shepard hits the key. He goes, I knew he could hear me. I mean, obviously, if the guy's sitting in the next block, sitting down there bootlegging, you know, I didn't even bother to sign my call twice. And then I knew he was a phony. As soon as I signed, he goes, oh, 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 Then I knew he was a fake. He has just told me that my 2.5 watts of signal is being heard with an S8 rating, an S8 signal strength, which is almost as loud as a signal can be in Murmansk or someplace like Murmansk. Well, I came back and I really read him out. I says, get off the band, you phonus balonus. I says, come on, knock it off. The RI, the radio inspector, is going to really bust your you-know-what. Get off the band before I really, you know. And I left the whole business. I says, oh, forget it. And I turned off the rig. I says, there's nothing on the band tonight. I don't want to mess around. It's bad signal sounds and all that. Well, that little episode kind of settled in my mind and it disappeared. You want to hear the upshot of it? 3 years later, I'm in the Army. And I'm standing around in mail call. And, you know, you get the usual letters from home, you use the newspapers and jazz. And I get a letter from the ARRL, which is the American Radio Relay League. And they said in the letter, we have some cards for you from distant stations, and we'd like to forward them to you. Would you please send us a stamp self with an envelope? So I said, okay, you know, I figured I'd get a couple of cards that I hadn't got answers to. And 2 weeks later, I get a letter from the ARRL, and in it is a card from UA1AE. He actually had heard me, and I was talking to a Russian. I was not talking to a bootlegger, and I had completely sloughed them off. It's like meeting a little old guy in a dark street corner. He says, hey, Mac, do you want to buy a Stradivarius for $12? And you say, get out of here, you phony. And the next day, there's a big headline. It says, man sells Stradivarius for $12. Man from Bronx buys it, is now wealthy. Is now living on Bermuda. I wonder if that guy in Milano has just recorded that. They've got $28 million worth of equipment, big dipole antennas revolving in the air, and what he gets is a note that Shepard's playing the Polytechnic Institute of Brooklyn. Hello, Milano. How are you? All right, George, I've been in Milano. Boy, do they have smog there. If you think Jersey's got crud coming down out of the sky, you ought to be in Milano someday. You know, that's where they build the Fiatos and all the rest of it. Fist fight and yell and holler. So, good luck to Milano. And you guys that are listening to us in Ockenborg, Sweden, we'd like to say hello to you. And for those of you listening to us in Augsburg, Germany, V. Gates. And all of you out there in Staten Island, hello. We're not making it to Staten Island tonight. Wind, you know, and all that stuff. And I'm not thinking. By the way, are you aware that the concentration of thought waves on your own radio receiver and television receiver will actually change its receptivity? Now, you think I'm kidding? I'm not kidding you at all. I'm not kidding. There is a direct correlation. So nobody knows, you know. You may be. See what happens? You realize your brain is an electrical instrument, right? You know that? There are electrical currents through your head, right? I mean, most people's head. All right. Okay? Well, if you think real hard, it sends out magnetic waves. And when magnetic waves get all around those little rabbit ears and dipoles around your receiver, God only knows what you're going to see. You better get your head shielded. You can wear a little helmet of Reynolds wrap, you know? You know, a little helmet of Reynolds wrap and put a little dipole on the top, and you and your friend can. Oh, well, you know, after all, what can you expect? It's great.